In Gerard Mannix Flynn's one-man show, James X, a man recounts the physical and sexual abuse he suffered as a child in Irish schools and other institutions as he waits to testify before a government commission investigating the abuse. Mr. Flynn has also created an installation of documents and photographs relating to the case, which is on display in the lobby of the Culture Project at 45 Bleecker Street, where the show is being performed, but only until this coming Sunday. It's directed by the distinguished actor Gabriel Byrne, and I'm very pleased to welcome Gerard Mannix Flynn, and we hope Mr. Byrne will be joining us soon. I welcome you to our show.
Thank you very much.
So didn't you originally perform the show in Dublin?
Yes, I originally performed the show in Dublin. The show has been in existence for about 5 or 6 years. The show took about 15 years to actually complete. There was a lot of research to be done on it. There was a lot of writing to be done on it. There was a lot of accuracy to be gotten into it.
And I'd imagine there was a certain amount of resistance initially. Things have changed in Ireland over the past 5 years, haven't they?
There was extreme resistance to the truth. There's always resistance to the truth. And in relation to this particular issue, which is about the physical, mental and sexual abuse of children in residential institutions by clerics and by the Catholic Church, there was massive resistance.
Isn't this it's U.S. premiere? Have you changed the show at all so that an American audience can understand all the references?
Well, we've just kind of tweaked the sensibility of it and made it much more, I suppose, coherent in terms of the voice that's coming out. And so we've put a lot more direction into the piece and slightly theatricalized it in the terms of the setting that it's in, which is in a theatre. I seldom perform in theatres. I'm very much interested in performing to the public as public. I don't subscribe to the idea of turning the public into audience.
So, because you see this also as a political piece?
It's very much a political piece. It's very much a political piece. It certainly comes out of informed politics. Certainly all the other journeys that I was on as a person who'd been in the institutions certainly seemed to fail, that every time you offered them some measure of compromise, some measure of love, some measure of understanding of their position, you seemed to get, again, this denial. They wanted you to basically absorb them of all their sins, and they basically wanted you to kind of forgive them without them ever attempting to admit that they actually did you any wrong in the first instance.
I thought the absolution came from them, not was given to them.
Well, that's what they would like you to actually take on board. They seem to have removed themselves entirely from humanity and become, so close to God that even God doesn't know that they're actually there beside him.
This show has been described as semi-autobiographical, but you've called it James X. How much of James's story is also yours?
Well, I suppose in the emotional sense, any trauma that's experienced by anybody is everybody's story that has experienced it. And there are many experiences within the traumatic experience, as I say, I would be very close emotionally to the story. The autobiographical content of it are, the true contents that are in it. There is a certain autobiographical content in it, but it's not my exact personal story. It is a consummate of all of the works that have taken place in the investigations in Ireland.
Have you spoken to other men who went through similar experiences?
I've spoken to quite a lot of male and female who've gone through the experience, and I've been journeying with this particular advocacy for the last 40-odd years. I mean, before I wrote this work, I had been in the business of advocacy, on radio programmes and on television programmes in Ireland, trying to explain what had actually happened. I'd written a book about the issues called Nothing to Say, which was published almost 30-odd years ago. And again, when I come onto forum, like the radio programme here or the Late Late Show in Ireland, I was basically ostracised as someone who basically was a bad boy and was looking to kind of damage the church. No such a thing. The idea of sexuality in Ireland is a peculiar thing. The idea of sexual abuse of children by clerics is outrageous, to say the least.
But do you think that attitudes have changed? Not just clerics. In this country, we now have some people who were considered near saints as athletic coaches who have also been accused of similar sorts of things. That would have been hushed up in the past.
There's a peculiarity in relation to the way institutionalised abuse takes place, or people who are attached to institutions, or people who have good standing in society. And when this abuse is coming basically from the ruling classes, you know, the issue that we've changed their attitude, not necessarily because people re-victimise victims, the other people that have been, you know, abused or sexually abused, they tend to push them aside, they tend to sympathise with them more than empathise them. Even when you look at, you know, the way that the media deal with it in terms of, you know, victim special unit TV programmes, it's all specialised and it's all overbearing and it's over the top and it's re-traumatising, it's hysterical and it's a special thing. So you're pushed out of the framework. The thing about it is that, you know, I think people are going to take this very seriously in America and in Ireland when they stop sending their children to these institutions without giving them prior warning, you know.
The show begins with you as a grown man waiting to testify before an Irish government commission that's investigating child abuse in institutions like reform schools, prisons, and mental institutions. Was there such an inquiry?
Well, there wasn't such an inquiry as such. What there was a commission to inquire into child abuse. But I think one has to remember that the commission to inquire into child abuse already knew the information that it was seeking, because the government were the very people who actually should have been investigated by an outside body. So what the government did prior to any investigation, that they indemnified themselves and they indemnified the church, and then they set about investigating. But all they were investigating was what they had on their own files. They didn't have to investigate. They knew exactly what it was. They took testimony from individuals both in private session and they took testimony from people in public session.
So you're suggesting that they were really looking for a whitewash?
What I'm suggesting is that, like, you know, whitewash, watered down whitewash is what this was. This was not a situation where anybody was actually held to account. It's important to know that nobody and no significant charges has been laid before anybody.
But haven't the revelations about a long history of abuse led to some angry exchanges between the Irish government and the Vatican?
Well, you know, I think you have to remember this much, that the Irish government is the co-accused here, you know what I mean? So the Irish government screaming at the Vatican about the fact that the Papal Nuncio or the Vatican State didn't respond to them, and the Vatican State responding to them saying, you know, you didn't come through the diplomatic channels, has validity. But the point of the matter is that in Ireland still, on the national networks and on the national broadcast, they still ring out the Angelus. There hasn't really been the kind of challenge to the Catholic Church. And I think it's really important to note that the Irish government, who locked in the region of 200,000 children into institutions and put them over into the hands of religious congregations, are a co-accused. And these people have to be very, very aware of these facts.
And what impact have these revelations had on the Irish population, which has traditionally been quite religious and also supported religion in politics?
Well, I suppose, again, what happens is that a state or a country or a people become traumatised, and what happens is they begin to, I suppose, sentimentalise the issue. The real political debate on what has happened here, the debate beyond, you know what I mean, what's happened to individuals, the societal debate as to what we do, how we comprehend this, is going to have to take place when The Hague eventually decide to hold a case against Ireland and hold Ireland guilty or find Ireland guilty of inhumane treatment and torture and abuses of children under that care.
My guest is Gerard Mannix Flynn. His one-man show, James X, is currently at the Culture Project at 45 Bleecker Street, but it's only running until this coming Sunday. Is there a possibility it might be extended?
Well, there's been certainly talk about extending the work. You know, I mean, I think we're coming up now to the holiday season. People are going to be very, very busy. I certainly, you know, will be bringing the work back to the US. There's a lot of invitations from Chicago, from Pennsylvania. There's a huge amount of requests coming in. It's not something that's going to go away. And James X gives some solution and gives some comfort and gives some hope to the issue going forward.
You take us through James's life story from conception through birth, early childhood, and then pretty quickly he winds up in an institution, a school run by the church?
Yeah, a school run by the Christian Brothers, who are an arm, a religious congregation who would be under the control of the Vatican, a very lonely, isolated place called Letterfrack in Connemara.
Why is he separated from his family?
He's separated from his family because what we know now from historical records is that the Christian Brothers, who basically controlled, you know, I mean, 5,000-6,000 hectares of land, wanted young children to work that land. So basically, once these children, you know, caught the attention of the authorities, the church then basically covered them to send them onto these institutions so they could be used as child labour.
So these are the equivalent of reform schools? Or vocational schools?
These in name are the equivalent to reform schools and industrial schools, but really, in actual fact, they were basically labour camps.
So how much learning took place there?
There was no learning that was learned there. There was no schooling, and whatever schooling there was very, very minimum. And the only time the schooling was used was when the government gave it grants. So it was basically they did the very minimum to get the government grants, because every child they had there, they got a government grant, plus the labour off the land, etc., etc., etc.
Some people must have been aware of what was going on. Were they just looking the other way?
Everybody was aware of what was going on, but I think you've got to kind of understand that Ireland is an institutionalised state controlled entirely by the Catholic Church. There wasn't a soul in Ireland who wasn't, you know what I mean, put through the system of Catholicism, of that kind of learning, from the top to the very kind of, you know.
Even if you weren't a Catholic?
Even if you weren't a Catholic, you know what I mean? As I say, you know, we've just had like an enormous, you know, conflict ended in the recent years, the Northern Ireland issue, which at the core of it was Catholics and Protestants, and these separations feared of each other, and then fear within those own structures. So while it was in very much, I mean, Amnesty International recently, a document that I worked on in plain sight, it's called, you know, describes this issue, that everything was in plain sight, but everybody was closed down. If you went to a figure of authority, you were ostracized. Nobody wanted to interfere, and nobody ever really wanted to talk about it.
Eventually, James is sent to a mental institution and a prison. Did he have mental problems?
No, he didn't have mental problems. But in the Irish state, as I say, you know, the officials could do what they like. The documents show very clearly, in the documents that we uncovered, that James was sent into an institution, a criminally insane institution, to see was he insane. And the only way to put him into the institution was to certify him insane.
But in every place, he seems to have suffered abuse, both physical and sexual, mostly at the hands of priests.
Yes, I mean, authority, like, you know, and torture and inhumane treatment, this just didn't happen in the Soviet Union under Joe Stalin. It happened everywhere, and it happens under regimes. And this is the way they controlled and contained individuals, particularly those that they saw as the poor or those who had no power. This is the way they contained and controlled vast volumes of people.
But do you think this is something that was unique to Ireland because of the relationship between government and the church? Perhaps certain people were attracted to the clergy because of those inclinations and might not have been in France or Italy or some other place?
I think certainly the documentation has shown up that it was particularly, you know, special to Ireland, because Ireland is an Ireland nation, and then you then look at the Irish Republic, and then you look at the kind of control and the struggle. So yes, it was a peculiar, you know what I mean, peculiarity here. It's showing up now that a lot of the clerics who are being arrested or being investigated abroad, particularly in America, are coming from Irish congregations. They've all got Irish names, quite a lot of them. There's a lot of, it's emanating back to Ireland. We're going to have to come up with some solutions. The fact today is that, yes, you know, in terms of everywhere else, you know, there were volumes of it. It was going on. It was going on in pockets. But to the extent that it was going on in Ireland, and to the extent of the cover-up and the collusion between the government, the officers of the state, the priests, the clerics, the bishops, the extent of it is absolutely phenomenal. Even to the present day, most recently, we have the revelations of the Klein Report, where the bishop refused point blank to inform civil guard or civil police authorities that there was rape and torture of individuals. It would seem to me that there's a total and absolute disregard for human beings, for the rule of law and order, and that cannot be. What is also really important to know is that if this was a terrorist organisation or a terrorist network, if it was a drug organisation or a gangland or a mafia organisation, it would be automatically investigated globally as an organised criminal activity. It's not been investigated to this matter.
Well, the feeling was, I've seen a film about the abuse of girls in some Irish institutions, and they were treated as though they were terrible sinners, and so they deserved any of the abuse that they got.
Well, you see, it's very easy to stigmatize and label people as sinners or Jews or blacks or whatever way you want to do it. The point of the matter is this, is that a system decided that these people, like, you know, were rubbish people, that these people didn't matter, that they weren't entitled to their constitutional rights or civil rights. And this is what happened here. And civil society and the respected middle classes were the ones at the end of the day who got some gain out of this, because they got their clothes washed by the Magdalene women. And they had this kind of peculiar moral reflection back to them.
Now, we learn James's story through a rather poetic stream of consciousness monologue. I'm not sure whether you were influenced more by James Joyce or Bertolt Brecht in putting this thing together.
Well, I think it was a cross between both of them. I mean, what I was influenced was how you get across, you know, 50 years of a person's life, you know, accurately and artistically and truthfully. And also, let's get the point across, entertainingly, because you can't bring a public into a place, hold them there for an hour and 10 minutes and traumatise them. You're giving them a full life. So it has all the rhythms of life. It has the rhythms of a New York street. It flows and ebbs, moves in and out.
You couldn't have written it as a straightforward recitation of the facts. It wouldn't have worked as theatre.
Well, I don't think so. And I find like theatre kind of out of step with contemporary life. I sometimes find that the styles of theatres, like, you know, sometimes actually like are out of step with what's really happening at the moment. And they're not connecting into what's very contemporary and modern and immediate.
We're getting responses from some of our listeners. A listener on Long Island left this comment on our show page. I think Gabriel Byrne, Liam Neeson and Manix Flynn, I thank them for bringing this important play to New York. I was raised in an industrial school in Ireland, as were my 14 siblings. Not one of us escaped being abused, be it physical, sexual, psychological, or emotional. I saw the play on opening night and was greatly moved by it. So this is how many people do you think have been put through this sort of thing?
Well, what we do know is that in Ireland, you know, I mean, in terms of the residential institutions, upwards of 200,000 people, children, were sent into those institutions. We don't know the exact figures.
It's that listener also wrote that the only people who have been criminalized are the children, not the perpetrators.
Well, that is a fact because, I say, once you were sent into these institutions by the court, you were criminalized. So all through your life, you had this criminal record running alongside you. So no one saw you as the person. They just saw your records. And when they saw your records, you regarded you as a write-off.
You've become a novelist, a playwright, an actor, a visual artist, and you've also been elected to political office. You're a Dublin city councillor?
I am indeed, yes.
So how did you manage to break out of the cycle of incarceration?
I suppose you have to break out of the cycle of incarceration as part of your journey in life. I mean, there had to be more to life than it, you know what I mean? So I just kept, pushing at the very edges of it and taking chances. I mean, it was it wasn't an easy journey. I developed, compulsive addiction. I developed alcoholism. I developed, all of the stuff. I mean, when you're in those institutions, you behave in a certain way, and that's the constitution of the place. When you come out into society, a lot of things, don't fit into place. So it takes a long time for you to be able to understand who you are, because everybody kept all this secret.
You participated in a panel discussion organized by the Center for Constitutional Rights this past Tuesday called The Case Against the Pope, International Accountability for Rape and Sexual Violence. Were most of the people involved Irish, or were they from other places as well?
No, there were people from Boston, there were people from Chicago, there were people from all over the United States of America who were actually championing this issue, because, as I say, this issue is not just about Ireland, but it's about Irish clerics, it's about the Catholic Church, it's about faith-based organizations and the rampant wholesale abuse of children. I mean, in America, as far as I'm aware, there are 6,000 priests who are coming before the judiciary and are being investigated for these kind of incidences. Now, that's huge phenomenon. That's massive, particularly when it's coming from an organisation like the Catholic Church. And the issues are, is it about celibacy? Is it about the priesthood? No, it's not. It's about crime.
There'll be an after-show talk tonight at 8:40 at the theater with the New York City Alliance Against Sexual Assault. And Gerard will be there along with State Senator Tom Duane, the chief of the Child Abuse Unit of the New York DA's office, and others. The James X is on at the Culture Project, 45 Bleecker Street, only until this Sunday. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you very much, Dennis. Pleasure.